of men's clothes, electric orange long sleeves, cheap flannel shirts, long underwear in sizes up to XXXXL, and baskets of socks and wool gloves, and arranged neatly inside of a glass case, pocket knives with handles made of elk horn, laid beside blackjacks and telescoping batons and brass knuckles labeled as novelty paperweights. And on the shelf just below, jet black BB pistols glistened like the real thing. Foam beer koozies and snow globes and postcards and shot glasses, every kind of souvenir, 6 for $10 and available in unique designs for each of the 50 states. Billy Ray perused the bric-a-brac, hoping to find an absurd gift to bring to Olivia, something silly to break the ice. He considered a t-shirt that read, Fart Collins, Colon Rado, but he didn't know her size, and guessing seemed like a minefield. An apron proclaiming Grandma's Do It in the Kitchen opened him up for skewering. A can of mace was probably the most practical gift, but it wasn't funny enough. And even though he thought it was hilarious, he doubted she would laugh at a Confederate flag towel. He was about to buy her a singing, wall-mounted fish when, laying on top of a bin of miscellaneous CDs, he spotted a two-disc set of the Pretenders' greatest hits. Olivia loved Chrissy Hynde. On many mornings, Billy Ray had woken up to Olivia butchering Brass in Pocket in the shower. I'll Stand By You was their first dance at their wedding. Well, I'll be damned, he said, putting a voice to the serendipity, raising the skin on his neck. He thought of Norm MacDonald and his soothsaying. Even filtered through his hardened cynicism, it was hard for him not to interpret the availability of this semi-popular British new wave band's greatest hits inside this rural gas station as a nudge from the universe. Some cosmic wink. He wasn't sure what it meant, but he was sure it meant something, and something was more to grasp at than nothing he had before. Triumphant and brimming with new confidence, he put the singing fish back on the shelf. He selected a turkey sandwich and a couple of prepackaged hard-boiled eggs from the grocery cooler, pausing for a moment in front of the open door to enjoy the refrigeration. Taped to the glass on the next cooler over, a handwritten sign read, "No beer sales on Sunday." Behind the sign, 6-packs and 40 ounces glowed under the fluorescent light. The cans and bottles reminded Billy Ray of the jewels in the Pink Panther movies. He coveted them the same. Billy Ray looked around. The gas station had filled up since he'd come in. At the front of the store, the two cashiers were busy with a line of customers, and he hadn't seen any other employees stocking the shelves. Casually, he scanned the ceiling and the corners of the building for cameras. Once, twice, spotted none. Blocking his actions with the width of his body, Billy Ray opened the beer case, forced 2 16-ounce Millers from their plastic rings. He tucked the beers under his arm and walked to the bathroom, holding his arm tight to his body like the victim of a stroke. The bathroom smelled of disinfectant and poor digestion. Billy Ray hurried past the row of men filling the urinals and found an empty stall. He sat down on the toilet, cracked one of the cans, coughing loudly to cover the hiss. The beer tasted like water. He finished it with 3 long swallows. The second beer he savored, pressing the can to his forehead between sips, enjoying the kiss of the cool aluminum. I should have brought the whole 6-pack, he thought. In another stall, it sounded like someone was sobbing. Been there, he thought. When the can was empty, he ate the sandwich and the eggs and hid the evidence of his meal behind the base of the toilet. He left the stall whistling. He filled a styrofoam cup with ice and Sprite and got in line for the counter behind a woman and her child. The woman's face was pulled, the beleaguered, tired specific to motherhood. Below a furrowed brow, she stared forward stone-faced, ignoring the child yanking on the hem of her dress and begging in Spanish, "Por favor, mommy, por favor." The woman remained indifferent as she stepped up to the cashier. Seeing his window closing, the child collapsed to the linoleum in a thrashing, squealing tantrum. Billy Ray looked on without empathy, appalled by the woman's indifference. It wasn't right to make this his problem. Billy Ray wanted her to slap the boy, to end this havoc and make him shut up. Over the woman's shoulder, Billy Ray's eyes met the cashier's, a stout white man with a knobby-shaved head. While the woman typed in her PIN number, the cashier smiled at Billy Ray and stuck out his tongue, while at the same time pointing his finger to his temple gunwise and pulling an invisible trigger. Billy Ray nodded. When her transaction was complete, the woman collected her bags with one hand, and in a movement that was obviously practiced, she yanked the boy's wrist without looking and dragged him mewling out of the door. The cashier shook his naked head. What a scene. I don't know how she takes it, Billy Ray said. If I ever acted that way, my mama would have slapped the bumps off my tongue. Mine, too. That must be a Mexican thing. Those fucking wetbacks, you can never tell. The man scanned the Pretender CD, and Billy Ray noticed the number 1488 crudely tattooed on the inside of his thick forearm. I won't charge you for the soda, brother. Billy Ray wanted to ask where he was locked up and for how long, and to tell him he understood, to trust him, he understood. But he knew he couldn't. That wasn't the kind of thing people talked about, even people like them. Instead, he added gas to his total and counted out a portion of his measly bankroll, and the cashier gave him his change, followed by a slow nod. Billy Ray sensed fraternity in the gesture. Along what lines, he wasn't sure, but he returned it anyway. And as he left, the neo-Nazi wished him a nice day. While the gas pumped, Billy Ray leaned in the car and splashed a few fingers of Listerine over the ice. When the pump clicked, he replaced the hose on the stand and moved the car to a parking space beside a small plot of fenced-off astroturf where people took their dogs to shit. He got out of the car and lit a cigarette and stirred his cocktail with his finger and let his mind drift like the clouds becoming shapes in the sky. He was glad he didn't have any cocaine, because if he did, he would do it, and he didn't want Olivia to see him that way. She could always tell. He had no idea what to expect. Maybe she would invite him in for a cup of coffee, and they would sit at the kitchen table they bought on that trip to Pittsburgh, the one where they danced on the Amtrak and she ate lamb for the first time. And maybe they'd talk in civil tones about times less sour, and she'd break out a bottle of wine, and after the second glass, he'd make her laugh, and he'd ask if she remembered where they got this table, and maybe she'd say Pittsburgh, and he would say, "Do you remember on the train when the dining car was empty and we danced without music? Do you remember when I asked you why you were crying, and you said it was just all too perfect, baby, and that it didn't get any better than that, and I too shed a tear because I knew you were right? Do you remember before we forgot how to love each other? When you were my everything, do you remember me when I was me? Because I remember you, and you were beautiful. We were beautiful. Do you remember where we got this table?" he would ask her, and maybe she would say yes. Most likely, he would never get close to the table. He'd be lucky if she let him on the porch. There was no reason for her to subject herself to him. From what he understood, she was happy in her life, and if she asked him to, he would turn around and leave her to it. For once in his life, it wasn't about what he wanted. It was about what she needed. And if she needed him to fuck right off and disappear forever again, then that's what he would do. He owed her that and so much more. He went into the diner attached to the truck stop and sat at the counter and ordered a cup of coffee. When it was empty, he motioned to the waitress and she came up with the pot. Her fingernails were chipped. "You want anything to eat? I wouldn't mind a bite of you." "Wow, I never heard that one before." He drank the coffee slow. He was in no hurry. Truckers chattered at a nearby booth. "I won't get home till Thanksgiving. Money isn't at home. Amen, amen." He took his third cup to go and left a $5 bill. Back in the car, he rolled down the windows to release the baked air. His head was beginning to hurt again. He drank the rest of the water and massaged his eyebrows with his palms. He was exhausted. He didn't remember the date. All he knew is tomorrow he went back to L.A. and he could sleep until it was time to leave again. That's all he had to do, that and go see Red. Hopefully the cruise ships came through. He knew the guy Carnival liked him. It was on Red. Red hated the boats. He called them a retirement home for hacks, the AARP, the American Association for Retired Prop Acts. It wasn't like that anymore. Billy Ray knew lots of boat guys, and some of them were still funny. Phil Palisol, Black Louis Johnson, they did boats, and they were as funny as anyone. Besides, Billy Ray didn't give a shit what Red thought. It was easy for Red to be judgmental from behind a desk. Red wasn't the one driving to Spokane from Calgary in freezing rain. Red never had to check his mattress for bedbugs. The road was built for young men, the hungry and excited. Billy Ray deserved better. The boats were easy work, and the money, forget about it. 5 days, 5 hours, $3,000 plus travel, and in the downtime, a life of leisure on a floating buffet? Fuck Red. What did he know about integrity? He represented ventriloquists. Integrity and 50 cents could buy you a phone call. Stability, though. Just show him where to sign. In the distance, faintly, like an echo of an echo, a train whistle blew. Billy Ray started the car. On the highway again, Billy Ray put on the Broncos game and cruised in the right lane, doing 5 over the limit. Traffic was light and consisted predominantly of tractor trailers. Billy Ray passed them before he got too close. It was best to give them plenty of room. The road curved, and suddenly he was driving directly into the sun. Even with sunglasses, the Daystar burnt holes in his vision. He tried to blink them away by shutting his eyes tight, but the imprints persisted. Orbs of pure white floated across the blackness like sparks. He knew Olivia's address, and he knew she lived in Old Town, because she lived on the same block as the house in which she was raised, the house where they celebrated every Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Easter, a modest ranch-style home her father bought with his GI Bill. Olivia loved her family, and her family tolerated Billy Ray. Their Midwestern roots were too strong to allow them to be naked with their disapproval. They asked him the same questions at every gathering, and in between answering them, Billy Ray slipped away to drink whiskey in the bathroom and smoke cigarettes in the garage. During the divorce, her mother died. Probably of happiness, he joked. Olivia didn't find it funny. She stopped laughing towards the end. That's when he knew it was over. Since the divorce was finalized, they'd seen each other twice, Jeremiah's high school graduation and Walker's wedding. On both occasions, she'd maintained decorum, even when he'd tried to hurt her. Billy Ray attended the wedding with a girl Jeremiah's age, Yvette, an actress from Long Beach whose interests included white witchcraft, Valium abuse, and borderline personality disorder. Yvette was his midlife crisis, a piece of all-expenses-paid arm candy who, when Billy Ray broke up with her, keyed the word liar into the door of his Thunderbird. Even he couldn't stand Yvette, but she filled out a dress and she didn't object when he asked her to watch him masturbate. He courted her with the specific intention of making Olivia jealous, but she greeted the girl with grace and charm, even laughing when Yvette described her dress as quaint. In the wedding photos, Billy Ray and Olivia stand next to their son. Olivia's beaming, radiant, ever the proud mother. The picture of elation with her arm around Walker, her smile swallows half her face. She is beautiful. She pulls focus from the bride. Beside her, Billy Ray's hollow eyes refuse the light. They are a shark's eyes, black and beady, and they stare out empty above a strange smile. He appears disingenuous, captive, his forced grin like that of a man in a mugshot whose jailer just told him to smile. It is clear that one of them is overjoyed to be in the photo, and one of them is heartbroken to no longer be in this family. His despair is palpable, even captured, on film. Their son looks tired. When the photo is developed, he doesn't have it framed. Fort Collins, 21, Cheyenne, Wyoming, 67. He was having doubts. In an hour, he could be in Cheyenne, frozen Coors in hand, sniffing around the roughnecks for the go powder that kept the rigs moving. Maybe he would meet someone, have fun, feel less alone. Maybe he would drink himself brave enough to lie down on the train tracks. Either sounded better than this ambush. The more he considered his plan, or lack thereof, the more it seemed like so much shit. Hello, Olivia. Remember me? The man you cut out like cancer? I'm here to rip open your stitches and poke around in the wound. You'll feel better afterwards, trust me. I promise. Olivia was bad at confrontation. She got messy, tears, violence. She had the mean in her. He could see her throwing a coffee mug at his head or lunging at him with a garden tool. She'd taken swings at him during their tenure, busted his lip with an ashtray once. Anything was possible when she felt cornered. He never held it against her. It was just more proof she cared. He rolled down the window, filling the car with new air, bright and clean and rich with the loam smell of industrial agriculture. The wind made a storm of the paper trash polluting the passenger floorboards, kicking up a flurry of receipts and napkins before sucking the flotsam out the window. Turning his face to the incoming air, he allowed the wind to lash his face. The barrage pulled his mind off the looming task, and for a moment his anxiety abated, and he was present entirely, alone in the bitter echo chamber of underlying pessimism that he feared deep down was his true personality. This was a waste of time, he thought, but so was everything. At least this way he could say he tried. It was going to be unpleasant, and it was going to hurt, but the good news was she already hated him, Even he couldn't make it worse. The totality of her disdain was a positive. Rarely did he know exactly where he stood with people. The awareness gave him strength. Knowing the odds allowed him to play to his outs. He strangled the steering wheel until his fingers went numb. None of this matters, he assured himself, and nothing has for 11 years. The day she told him she wanted a divorce, he had flown in red-eye from Madison, Wisconsin, and he was still drunk from the night before. Olivia, shattered by her conversation with the father of the Miami waitress, was living with the boys at her sister's. They'd tried couples therapy, but the sessions were utter failures. Billy Ray blamed it on the therapist, a hippy-dippy fish head from Boulder that alluded to his famous clientele by their initials and talked in the convoluted buzzwords that peppered the titles of the books that he wrote. The linchpin of his system was something called emotional excavation, a series of brutal inquests that only served to remind Olivia that her husband had always been an asshole. Forgotten transgressions were brought to the surface, and Billy Ray spent the majority of each $700 hour tied to the whipping post, apologizing for mistakes from 10 years ago, while Olivia emptied boxes of Kleenex and the therapist repeated, "You're hearing her, but are you listening?" On the ride home from an especially ugly session, which included the remembrance of a forgotten birthday in 1991, his long history of mocking her brother's speech impediment, and the multiple times he promised their sons he would quit smoking, Billy Ray expressed his frustration thusly. "He's got me on the fucking cross, Liv, and you're handing him the nails. You and that hack won't quit until I'm begging on my goddamn knees. Is that what you want? I can do that. Just tell me. I know I fucked up. I don't need to be reminded. We don't need new evidence. I'm red-handed. I plead guilty. So why don't we skip the trial, proceed straight to the sentencing? That way, I can get to work on my fucking appeal." They attended no more sessions after that. On the day she told him she wanted a divorce, he drove straight from the airport to pick up the boys for soccer practice. He arrived 20 minutes late, blamed it on a baggage snafu, and rushed his sons to the park in Englewood while sipping whiskey and 7-Up from a big gulp cup. When they'd separated, Olivia spared the boys the details at Billy Ray's request. Walker, his mother's champion, had eavesdropped on enough of their arguments to know that whatever transpired, it was definitely his father's fault, and he sided with Olivia. He'd said little to his father since they'd moved out, but Jeremiah was too young to understand what was happening. He was accustomed to his father being gone most of the time, and staying at his aunt's felt like an extended sleepover. He talked excitedly the entire drive, announcing the breed of every dog they passed, and when they arrived at the park, after Billy Ray promised them post-practice Dairy Queen, Jeremiah gave his father a long hug. While the boys scrimmaged, Billy Ray sat down in the grass, chain-smoked until practice was over. Then the three Schaefers got soft serve, ate it in the store because he didn't trust them with ice cream, in the car. On the day she told him she wanted a divorce, Billy Ray remembered Olivia was wearing a peasant blouse with the sleeves rolled up and a pair of cut-off jean shorts. He remembered noticing the tone of the muscles wound around her arms, her tightly packed quads. She'd been working in her sister's garden, and the planting had raised a thin sheen of sweat that plastered her bangs to her forehead. She looked healthy and vital, and unlike him. She came to the car and told the boys to go inside because she and Daddy needed to talk, and he remembered receiving her use of the word Daddy as a good sign. Before she climbed into the car, she patted the dirt off her, and he thanked her, and she smiled queerly, like the sun was in her eyes, and she told him to drive, and he said where, and she said it didn't matter. She looked out the window as he drove away from him, and he watched her in the side mirror out of the corner of his eye. Around her neck, she wore a bandana bandit style. She always complained that her neck was too masculine, lamenting the coils of muscle that stood as pronounced and sharp as vertical collarbones, but he loved the length of it, the elegance. Between her neck and her shoulder blade existed a declivity just big enough for his face. It was his private space. Of all of her, he missed that expanse the most. As she often did when doing housework, she'd tied her hair back, and as she stared out at the passing starter homes, she absently twirled the tip of the pony around her finger. He'd always described her hair as brown, but he saw now, as she pulled her hair tight and let it relax, that the color changed in the sunlight from chestnut to dark honey and back again. She smelled like soil and Dove deodorant. "I love you," he thought, "and I abandon you. Please, dear God, let me find you again. He wanted to touch her, to taste her, to feel her skin, to know her warmth, to apologize without words, but he'd forfeited tenderness long ago. Instead, they rode down the side street, saying nothing, Billy Ray afraid to speak while the woman whose love he'd let atrophy gathered the courage to begin. On the day she told him she wanted a divorce, finally, loud as birth in the bloated silence, Olivia cleared her throat. She turned to face him, and he saw that she had been crying. The tears cut streaks down her dusty cheeks. Eyes wide, lips drawn white, she looked confident, certain. He knew whatever she was about to say would define them. He held his breath. I've been thinking, she said. I've been thinking a lot. Then she began to weep. Fort Collins, next three interchanges. Passing Harmony Road, he dropped his speed 5 below the limit before the truck way station where the state troopers roamed. After Prospect, the internet shrunk by a lane. He checked his blind spot, flipped on his blinker, and took the last exit. Once a dedicated farm road, the state added the exit to Highway 50 in the 90s to accommodate the beer trucks entering and exiting from the Anheuser-Busch Brewery. Standing a mile back from the roadway, the massive facility, which looked like a cream-colored prison, dominated the horizon. From the brew house, new clouds belched into the bright blue void, making the day smell like burnt oats. At first whiff, the smell set Billy Ray into an intense panic as he interpreted the toasted odor to be the first sign of a stroke. Terrified, he pulled over to the shoulder. He knew the typifiers. He checked the rearview mirror to see if either side of his face was sagging while talking as fast as he could with both of his arms raised. I'm talking, talking, talking. Here we go. Time to talk. No slurring, no worries. Talkie talk. 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, 7, 6, 5. 5 alive. Drink and drive. Time to thrive and realize. I'm talking. Until he realized it was just the stink of cooking Budweiser. Relieved. Billy Ray exhaled sharply, his alarm replaced by foolishness. He smiled. Pull it together, old man. Then he stepped out of the car and fed a cigarette to his nerves. Her house wasn't far from here. He recognized a barn in the field to his left, and he knew there was a gas station in less than a mile. And at that gas station, he turned right and then left and then left. And somewhere on that street, his ex-wife lived her new life. In the ditch, a pack of late-season sunflowers, a few taller than him, tottered in the breeze. Billy Ray dug in the glove box until he found his pocket knife, severed 3 of the fat flowers, and laid them in the back seat. He sat on the trunk and finished his cigarette and lit another. When the driver of a passing minivan gave him a wave, Billy Ray flipped her the bird and laughed at the juvenility. He reapplied deodorant, spritzed cologne. He applied paste to his toothbrush before he remembered he'd been drinking mouthwash and put it away. He stretched his arm out to the side and moved them in small circles. He kicked his heels like showtime. He needed to be ready. He needed to be sharp. The feeling in his stomach reminded him of performing on live television. All right, he thought. Okay, then. He returned to the car. The road had been widened recently, and the construction was unfinished. In the left lane, oncoming vehicles drove on fresh asphalt, the tarmac wet looking in its blackness, darker than any color in nature. Billy Ray drove slowly, navigating an alligator-cracked roadway of unpaved red dirt and feeling the bump of every rut in his lower back. The gas station was shuttered, the parking lot eaten up by crabgrass. He turned right past a herd of doofy alpacas. Then he turned left and left again on Friar Tuck Avenue. Deja vu consumed him fully. The houses were as he remembered them, squat, asymmetrical, ubiquitous. All that was new was the paint and the models of cars in the driveways. Walker learned how to ride a bike on this street, Christmas Day, 1997. Billy Ray holding the seat while the boy gathered balance, confidence, speed, both of them squealing, running behind until he couldn't keep up and he let go and the boy drifted away. Being here tugged a string tied to a long, dormant sadness, a sentimental melancholy, obsolescence. It felt like getting old. The continuation of life, he suddenly understood, was the ultimate betrayal. He hoped she offered him a glass of something stronger than wine. The house numbers were painted on the curb. He knew the address from years of writing it on an envelope. 719, 721, 725. He stopped the car in front of a tidy split-level, shed-roofed house with porthole windows and a birdbath in the yard. Topiary bushes framed a brick walkway that led from the sidewalk to the stately front door. Parked beneath a basketball hoop attached to the garage, a seafoam Subaru with a bumper sticker that read, "Women for Hillary," looked as if it had just been cleaned. He looked up and down the block. It wasn't the largest house, but it was the most well-maintained, classic Olivia. He thought it would be smaller, hoped, actually prayed. This was a castle compared to where he lived. He wanted worse for her. He wanted vinyl siding or Navajo white, plastic storm windows, a battered screen door. But no, even the lawn was perfect. This was a nice house in a nice neighborhood where a nice woman raised her nice sons. Happy fucking birthday on the 4th of July. Did they know where the money came from? Did they know that this house cost exactly half of his heart? He caught himself. No, you don't. If you were wearing a hat, it would be in your hands. Instead of an altar to his failures, he tried to see the house for what it really was, the building in which his sons grew into men. He was glad to know that the divorce provided enough for his sons to grow up in a place like this. It didn't matter if they knew where the money came from. Honestly, it was better if they forgot. This house was more than he had as a child, and for that, he could be proud. He collected the Sunflowers and the Pretenders CDs and double-checked his hair, and after downing a stiff swig of Listerine, he got out of the car and put on the overshirt. The neighborhood, tepid in the malaise of Sunday afternoon, was quiet and still. The street was empty beside this trespasser. Even alone, he got the feeling he was taking up too much space. He took a deep breath of air that smelled of meat cooked with charcoal. Well, he thought, and that was all. Well. Crossing the street, he hoped to be run over and crushed and saved. No part of him wanted to proceed, but still, there he was, stepping up on the sidewalk, his legs autonomous of his fear, his hands skimming the tops of the manicured bushes. "Remember," he muttered as he pulled at his collar, "you're the bad guy." The recessed door created a small veranda she decorated with a large pot of lavender asters flanked by a pair of ceramic gnomes. The pair of them portly and still smiling despite their chipped and broken faces. The welcome mat read, "Welcome." It looked clean and unused. Through the windows, the house appeared dark and empty, but from behind the door he heard the noise of a television. Olivia, the conservationist. She never left the TV on when she wasn't home. "Fuck," he said. "Fucking all right." He pressed the doorbell, but it made no sound. He tried it again. Nothing. Reluctantly, he knocked, shave and a haircut, on the red-painted wood, the bark of a dog, the skitter of claws on hardwood. "Oh, yes, Gordy, get him!" That voice. "Get him, buddy. That's right. Go get him." Like a memory, it came closer, as did the pause. Billy Ray resigned, nodded his head. Pushing up on his toes, he watched through the transom as a wiggling puff of curly white fur scurried down a long hallway, followed by her, by Olivia. Her. Olivia, wearing sweatpants and shoeless and brushing her bangs out of her eyes. Olivia, formerly Olivia Schaefer, nay Prudholm, now Prudholm again, pulling her shirt down, smoothing it flat over the stomach where his sons had lived. Olivia Svetlana Prudholm. They said she went by Lana now. Lana Prudholm, coming right at him, walking down the hallway of her house, cooing after her dog, condescending, maternal. Her voice, the voice he heard in his dreams. "Oh, yes, Gordy. Oh, yes, you killer. Get him, buddy. Go get him. Tear him to shreds." "There she is," he muttered. The door opened. There she was. "Hey there, Liv." She squinted. Her mouth hung open. Billy Ray smiled, aiming for harmless and friendly, but appearing instead like he had just now shit his pants. The dog, a little poodle terrier-looking thing, jumped up on his shins, and Billy Ray saying, "And hello to you, sweetness," bent down to pet it, but at the reach of his hand, the dog hid behind her feet and growled from the back of its throat, and Billy Ray stood up and faced his ex-wife. Olivia looked puzzled, contemplative, like she was trying to remember a piece of trivia, like she wasn't sure if her answer was correct. "I was in the neighborhood," he offered weakly. "Here." He held forth the flowers, and she received them without saying anything. "And check it out." He flicked his wrist like, ta-da, Pretenders. She took the CD, handling it as if it were booby-trapped. It was only $10, he explained. It's got all the hits. Walker put all my music on the computer. You could listen to it in the car, she stared at him. Music always sounds better in the car. What are you doing here, Billy? Like I said, I was in the neighborhood and, I don't know, I saw Jeremiah yesterday. He told me. Oh, what'd he say? He said he saw you. He asked if I was dying. He said you weren't. I'm not. Too bad. Have you met his girlfriend? Yes. She's pretty. I think they're in love. Olivia itched the back of her leg with the toe of her other foot. The dog sniffed Billy Ray's ankle. What are you... How long have you been here? I just pulled up. I mean in Colorado. Since Friday. I'm supposed to be working WITS. Oh, right. Grace told me. No one told me. Told you what? That the freezer broke. The freezer? The freezer broke at WITS. Don canceled the shows. Oh, poor Don. He'll be fine. Billy Ray squatted down and let the dog lick his fingers. He told me you were going by Lana. That's what they call me at school, Coach Lana. It's better than Coach Prude. The dog's tongue felt like a slug on the back of his knuckles. Fur overgrew its eyes, rendering the pup just a mouth and a nose. Billy Ray scratched its haunch and the dog's leg started to thump. It reminded Billy Ray of air guitar. Scratching its belly caused the dog to roll over and expose itself. There's my chapstick, he said. Billy Ray looked up at Olivia and smiled, hoping to parlay his effectiveness with the dog, but her face maintained its veneer of impatient distaste. Come on, he thought. Work with me. The small talk made him nervous. This wasn't sustainable. He wanted to be asked inside. He felt unacquainted out here, lesser than. I'm not selling magazines. What's the dog's name? Gordy. Hello, Gordy. You're just a little coconut, aren't you? What do you want, Billy? He stood up at his full height. Her eyes met his sternum. Without makeup, her long hair streaked with veins of silver gray. She looked tired, but not sleepy. She seemed reduced somehow, lacking substance, frail. But she was still beautiful. It was a hard thing to stay beautiful. He hoped she knew. I don't want anything. You drove a long way for nothing. I go back to L.A. tomorrow. I don't know. I just thought, I don't know. I feel bad. She sneered. You feel bad? Yeah. Poor thing. That's not, don't expect me to cheer you up. I feel bad about it, how I did you. Olivia closed her eyes and opened them, not blinking, but purposeful. Through her nose, she exhaled loudly, then crossed her arms, the flowers under one arm, the CD under the other. She leaned against the doorframe. How much have you had to drink today? He held his forefinger an inch from his thumb. Just a scooch. I had a long night. Your nights are so long, it's a miracle you ever see the sun. I'm getting better. Right. What happened to your face? I fell. You fell. Olivia's eyes rolled back inside her skull. From how many stories? Billy Ray stepped backwards, put his hands on his hips, and turned away from her. He hated that she thought she had to act this way. You're making this hard, he said to the street. An airplane raked a white line across the sky. Fuck you, Billy. Don't get me started on hard. You don't have to yell. You don't get to tell me what I have to do. I should just go. I don't give a shit what you do. I worried about what you did for 13 years. Worried sick. Is he all right? Is he okay? Is he alive? Is he dead in a ditch? I worried every night you were out on the road. Worried until I couldn't sleep. But I worried worse when you got home because I saw what you were turning into. I wasted 13 years of my goddamn life worried over you because I thought that's what love was. Guess what? I'm not worried anymore. I'm sorry. Fuck your sorries, Billy. You were always sorry. Motherfucker, if I had a nickel, I'm sorry, sugar. That was your fucking catchphrase. You should have put it on a t-shirt. You could have bought another house. Her composure was waning. Slapping the side of the house to accentuate her sentences, she snarled in an exaggerated whisper. Her eyes were wet from fury or lamentation. He couldn't tell. She was ready to break. He'd forgotten how anger put the sailor in her tongue. They'd tried to implement a swear jar when Walker was in kindergarten, but she kept filling it up too fast. She made a fun bit out of it around the house, wherein, whenever she cussed, she would slap her head over her mouth in faux embarrassment and say, "Did I just swear? Shit, I thought I fucking did. God damn it." Stringing curses while Walker kept running tally on his fingers of exactly how much he owed. It always got a laugh out of Billy Ray and the boys, but she did it too much. Then it wasn't funny anymore. Billy Ray was unsure how to continue. He wasn't good on defense. He preferred to serve and control the tempo of the volley. If she kept it up with the hard case, he was bound to slip up and go somewhere too far. He didn't want to say anything. Forgetting about her disdain for the act, he dug out his cigarettes and sparked one, puffing tough. He snorted out the smoke like a bull and stared up at the sky. Olivia waved her hand in front of him, fanning the smoke away from her face. "Billy Ray Schaefer's got nothing to say. Well, I should have bought a Powerball." "I'm thinking," he said. "Don't pull a muscle and don't ash on the porch." "I didn't come here to fight, Liv." "Don't call me that. I always hated when you called me that." "All right, Lana." "Fuck you." "I know, you said that. What the fuck did you think was gonna happen coming up here? Did you think it was gonna be cake and ice cream? Even you're not that dumb. You ruined me, Billy Ray. You broke me right in fucking half. And since then, I've worked hard to pick up the pieces of me I can find, the parts I can identify, and I've persevered and held it together and did my best for the two boys you let grow up alone. I took care of them, and you know what? They turned out great. They're smart and loving and beautiful. And it was easy because before then, I took care of you. You, the drunk, the cokehead, the egomaniac, the womanizing bastard who couldn't keep his dick in his pants. I took care of you because I loved you, you son of a bitch. I loved you, and for 13 years, 13 fucking years, the good years, the ones you don't get back, I dealt with your mood swings, your mania, the complaining. Jesus Christ, why didn't I get this? Why did he get that? I coddled you, damn it. I changed your fucking diaper. I was there for the highs and I was there for the lows, every one of them. I lived my life filtered through you. And while I was taking care of you, no one was taking care of me. And now I can't have a relationship. I can't go on dates. I won't let anyone close to me because I forgot how to be soft. You sucked the soft right out of me. Now I'm hard, I'm brittle, and it's all because of you. So when you show up out of nowhere drunk in the afternoon, don't act surprised when I don't invite you in for tea." At this time, she began to shake. In her armpit, the flowers quivered, shedding petals. From her glassy eyes, tears escaped. She buried her face in her folded arms, and all he could see was the top of her head and the tip of her nose. Her shoulders moved up and down, standing there, her arms wrapped tight like a straitjacket. He wouldn't have been surprised if she shot off like a rocket or exploded into shrapnel. So was the intensity of the emotion burning off of her. It was like waves of heat. Billy Ray's instinct said to reach for her, to bring her into him, and hold her there. But she was likely to kill him if he did. He wouldn't fight it. That would be good, proper, tit for tat. And as she destroyed him, he'd go out with his fingers crossed that she got away with it. Because she would get away with it if justice were real. He pulled his hanky and held it out. "Here." She eyed it like it was a snake, but she took it and emptied her nose inside of it and held it bald in her hand with just a corner exposed as she continued to shake. Below her, the dog sniffed at the gnomes. He seemed indifferent, like this was nothing new. "Do something," thought Billy Ray. But the dog was like him, powerless. And Billy Ray understood she was completely alone. "I don't know why I'm crying," she said. "I do. Crying never fixed nothing. There's no fixing some things. I didn't know all that was still in there. It's good. No, it isn't. It's good it's out. You weren't lying. He flicked his cigarette to the sidewalk. I was shit. I know it too. Don't. If I can't apologize, at least let me say it. His stomach was tight. He wished he had something to drink. You're a good woman. You didn't deserve me. Shaking her head, she dabbed her face with the hanky and handed it back to him. No one deserves anything. You just get what you get. Stay here. Then she went inside the house. Not knowing what to do with himself, Billy Ray squatted down to be nearer the dog. His knees popped with the effort. The joints sounded like gravel. I should go, he thought. One of the dog's eyes was green, the other blue. Billy Ray itched under his collar. You're the new baby, huh? The dog was small enough to fit in a microwave. Maybe I should get a dog, he thought. But then he remembered that he was never home and that a dog was one more thing he couldn't have. Her footsteps were loud in the hall. She returned with a tumbler poured full of ice and wine and a bottle of beer. Here, she handed him the bottle. I couldn't find a church key. Two-hearted, he said, reading the label aloud. Never heard of it. The boys like it. Holding the bottle by the neck, Billy Ray wedged his lighter between the bottle cap and his index finger and pried the beer open. The beer was sour, but in a pleasant way. He thanked her and put the cap in his pocket. Gently, Olivia towed the dog in the house and shut the door, then sat on the lip of the planter pot, leaning forward with her elbows on her knees. I'd invite you in, but I don't want to. Billy Ray nodded. That's okay. It's nice out here. I was watching the Broncos game. I was listening on the drive up. What a mess. Is it over? It's over. We lost. That's why it's so quiet. Damn. We're just not a good team. There's no chemistry. We need a quarterback. We need a miracle. A family, two little girls, and a man and a woman rode past the front of the house on bicycles. One of the girls pushed hard on a tricycle while the adults, in matching sweatsuits, worked together on a tandem. The eldest of the girls rode out in front of the pack. Hurry up, she called, calling back to her family. We're going to miss it. And she was off again. Walker's having a baby, you know? You know? Germ told me. It's going to be a little girl. Uh-oh. That's what he said. Girls are different than boys. I'm excited. I've had my fill of boys. Makes sense. Olivia held her glass up to the sky. They say it's going to snow. It was hot today. Fall in Colorado. You know what they say? If you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes. They say that everywhere. That doesn't make it not true. I forgot how pretty the Novembers are. I hate it. Look, it's already getting dark. Billy Ray leaned against the house and crossed his legs at the ankles. They sipped their drinks quiet for a while. The night was setting in, erasing another day. As the sun closed in on the earth, the sky grew darker, from an almost colorless lavender overhead to skirting on the horizon, a saturated electric orange, the color of fires and fruit. He looked at Olivia's face. Her eyes were closed, her lips purple with wine. She probably had to work tomorrow. He got the feeling that she was waiting for him to say something. He let the silence go on until it got weird. You been getting the checks? He asked. You'd know if I wasn't. When's the baby due? End of April. Spring chicken. He's freaking out. Have you talked to him? Not since the wedding, and we didn't talk much there. You know how he is. No, not really. He was older. Jeremy had different memories. They're grown now. Jeremy likes to say he is. He sure is a handsome kid. He's got that long muscle. White people don't usually get that long muscle. Here we go. I'm just saying. Billy Ray tilted up the last of the beer and tapped the bottle against the side of the house, hoping she'd respond to the hollowness with a fresh one. His bladder was full, but he wasn't about to ask to use the facilities. This was fine. He could hold it. On the street, snow began to fall. You remember when Jeremy had to dress up as MLK for that history project? I still don't know where he got that shoe polish. What a knucklehead. He almost got expelled. I wish I had a picture of that. I don't have any pictures at all. Billy Ray pulled out another cigarette and tapped it on his lighter. Do you remember when Walker? Don't do that. What? I don't want to play do you remember. I haven't forgot. Okay, he said. He'd pay her for another beer. I went to Drifter's the other day. How was it? Tasted the same. Did you get the Frito pie? Yeah, and the shake. I love those Frito pies. He opened his mouth to say yep, or he sure did, or some other simple acknowledgement that he remembered her affinity for corn chips dressed with red chili, but instead, without his consent, usurping preconception, the words escaping like captives toward daylight, he said, I loved you, you know. I really did. Amazed, her mouth ajar, she stared at him, looking through him, peering back in time, back before now, before, way back, trying to remember when his head was pompadoured and his cigarettes were rolled up in his sleeve, back when he made her laugh until she cried, back when they were happy and unfractured and his mutton chops were still only sideburns, trying to picture what they were like, what she was like, trying hard to envision them, trying because, despite everything he'd become, and contrary to his actions for the last 15 years, he was right. He had loved her. She'd felt it. She'd known him when he was sweet. His was a powerful love. She spent a decade as a satellite trapped in its orbit, and when the gravity became too weak to hold her, she drifted away. Not just from him, but from herself. Yes, she hated him, and no, she would never be with him again, but there was a time when he was everything, when she planned after death to be buried beside him, to be consumed by the same worms. What happened to that man? She would never know. It was impossible. They were all that way, comedians. She didn't pretend to understand them. All the ones she knew were mutated. Something to do with the pressure had changed them, like the fish that adapt to survive at the bottom of the sea. She saw it eat him up. There was nothing to be done. He was good at it. You could say what you want about him, but he was excellent at his job. His talent was both the cause and the cure. With stand-up, Billy Ray was only happy on stage. He lived for the hour. The rest of his life was just filler, abeyance. In the face of such nothing, he tried to feel something else, filling the empty times with chemicals and imprudence, but nothing compared. The thrill was as inimitable as it was ephemeral. Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be comics. Stand-up, his passion, and her albatross. He was married to comedy before he was married to her. It was the weight that hung perpetually over their relationship, dangling on a strand as thin as his ego. It was too much. Eventually, they were crushed by the shadow, and now they existed as ghosts. I know you did, she said. I'm sorry. I know. Okay. That's what makes it so hard. With that, she finished the wine in her glass and pushed to her feet. I have to work in the morning. Yeah, I got an early flight. From DIA? Si, senorita. Well, vaya con Dios. Where should I put this? He held up the bottle. Here, she said, and he handed it to her. You think I could get one more for the road? Sure, hold on. The dog was waiting for her when she opened the door. No walk tonight, buddy. It's snowing. The dog reared up on its hind legs, bringing its forepaws together. It looked like it was clapping. Alone again, Billy Ray watched the snowfall. It was picking up. Already a thin film of crystalline white shimmered like powdered diamonds. Refracted in the surface, silvering light painted phantom rainbows atop the accumulation, turning the street into a glittering borealis, swirling pink and purple. He wondered what Walker would call his daughter. He hoped he would name her after his mother. It was good luck to name a baby after a saint. Olivia returned holding two bottles of beer and a couple of slices of pizza wrapped in a paper towel. Here, she said. You didn't have to do that. No shit. I'm not going to eat it. It's old. All right. He was famished. He stacked the slices and took a bite out of both at once. And here. She pulled a photograph from under her arm. You said you didn't have any pictures. In the photo, Billy Ray stands shirtless in a swimming pool, holding his sons aloft, one in each arm. The boys are young. Jeremiah sports water wings and dressed in trunks. Pink and sunburned, Billy Ray's body is yet to go to seed. His chest is solid and pert. His arms are thick and defined, wrapped around his sons. They make the boys appear even smaller than they are, more precious. Jeremiah, either shy or asleep, buries his face in his father's bicep. Walker hams it up, smiling a big goofy grin that is minus two of its front teeth. The tip of his tongue pokes through the gap. Only Billy Ray looks into the camera. His eyes are clear, his smile sure and relaxed. Everything about him says, I got this. They are ideal. They could be actors in a commercial for water park or term life insurance. Who will take care of them when you're gone? Reflected in the bottom left corner, Olivia's face hides behind a camera. Only her mouth is visible. She is smiling. Where is this? He asked. Glenwood Springs. I think it was Memorial Day. Look at that body. I should go to prison more often. You can have it. You. Thank you. And for the pizza and everything. Like I said, I'm not going to eat it. All right, then. I better get ahead of this snow. It's supposed to keep coming. Damn. I hope we get buried. Billy Ray turned to leave, but then he turned back. Will you let me know when the baby comes? I'd like to send a card. Sure, she said. Maybe I'll fly out. Maybe, she said. Okay, then. And with that, he left. On the sidewalk, the smooth soles of his boots struggled for traction in the snow. Easy, he said. Easy. After a few precarious steps, he switched to sliding his feet along the pavement, moving through the wet slush like a skater on a pond, and hugging the beer bottles tight to his chest. The wiper blades easily removed the snow from the windshield. As the car warmed up, he chewed pizza and marveled at the version of himself in the picture she gave him. That's it, he said. Tomorrow I'm doing push-ups. He secured the photograph in the visor and nipped a bit of the mouthwash before cracking one of the beers. The only light in Olivia's house was the pulse of the TV. He hoped his son named the baby after her. The neighborhood was abandoned at this hour, the only sound the crunch of the snow beneath his tires. Driving through the emptiness, Billy Ray hummed to himself, enjoying the notion that the rest of humanity had been seized by a sudden rapture, leaving him alone as the last man on Earth. The evening had played out much better than he expected. She hadn't attacked him with gardening tools, and he'd avoided saying cunt. Progress, he thought. He'd achieved what he'd set out to do, allowing her an opportunity to vent directly to his face, to drain her residual poison on the cause of her ailment, and he'd managed to keep his mouth shut, to listen, to accept, all while avoiding the woe-is-me martyring he'd relied on in the past. Not once did he employ the cliched rhetoric of the vilified breadwinner. I work hard to provide for this family, and this is the thanks I get. How many times had he screamed those 15 words? The refrain was the bedrock of his defense, because at the time, that was how he saw himself. Underappreciated, sacrificial, selfless. But now, seeing with vision afforded men who live wasted lives, he understood his former position to be a fiction, concocted to allow himself, the legendary wild man Billy Ray Schaefer, to continue to act with impunity despite his growing responsibilities. In truth, he booked 200-plus days a year because, at the root of it, he liked his job, and further, he was afraid to say no. The travel, the party, the admiration of strangers, it was all very exciting for a man that grew up in a small and violent world. And yes, he loved the income and he got off on dominating crowds, but of all that trappings of his lifestyle, he most coveted the sense of validation that came with success. After so many years of turmoil, from criminal to prisoner to felon, it was vindicating to find a home in a semi-legitimate industry. Once he tasted self-worth, there was no going back. Of his many titles, more than husband, father, homeowner, or sane, it was most important to Billy Ray that he be defined as a comedian, and a good comedian at that. The pursuit of that denotation decimated three innocent lives, and in maintaining it, wounded countless civilians. And here in the end, it was the only name he had. His life's work destroyed him, left him embattled and bitter, an infamous Ronin with no spine and a weak heart. There would be plenty of open seats at his funeral, and of those that attended, he doubted many would shed a tear. But still, despite the carnage, both foreign and domestic, when he reflected on the events that comprised the total of his life, beneath the overwhelming regret, Billy Ray felt a strange and reluctant pride. As a father and a husband and a man, he was an undiluted failure. But as a comedian, in the span of their lives, few men are afforded the opportunity to put a price on their soul. In a lifetime pockmarked by failure and gluttony and greed, he was grateful to be of the minority allowed to choose their own worth. "A girl," he said. "We're having a girl." At the main road, he pulled over to answer the call of his bladder. Behind the forgotten gas station and out of sight of the highway, Billy Ray unzipped himself, carved his initials in the snow, and underlined them. BRS. Three steaming letters spelling I exist, at least temporarily. When he finished, he lit a cigarette and walked out a few steps into an undeveloped clearing that filled in the space between the gas station and Olivia's neighborhood. Across the field of undisturbed white, the houses appeared small and inconsequential, two-dimensional, like the backdrop to a film set in which nobody lived. Above him, behind the waves of snowflakes falling like ticker tape, the Big Dipper pointed at Polaris, and from that brightest of stars, Billy Ray divined true north. Standing in the stalks of broken crabgrass, alternating lungfuls of hot smoke with a cold night, Billy Ray swelled with an unfamiliar optimism. A baby was coming, his granddaughter. With her arrived a new future. Reclamation. She will be his second chance. On the day of her birth, he will be waiting, pacing the waiting room with a pocket full of cigars. From the moment he sees her, his life will be different. To her, he will keep every promise. To her, he will never lie. In his presence, she will want for nothing. He will buy ice cream. He will purchase toys. For her, he'll quit smoking. Because of her, he'll want to live. She won't know the man who destroyed her grandmother. She won't know the man her father detests. She will only know Grandpa, and she will love him completely, and for the rest of his days, he will love her the same. A little baby girl, he said to the emptiness, trying unsuccessfully to thwart a creeping sanguinity. Embracing hope was dangerous. How'd the old joke go? I'd rather get my hopes up than my dick up. At least I know if I get my hopes up, I'm definitely getting fucked. When his cigarette was spent, he finished the beer and tossed the bottle in the field. When it landed without a sound, he knew the drifts were getting deep. He parked in a bad spot. Fighting the wet snow, it took him a few attempts to get the car moving, and once he'd rocked it loose, he had to gun it to break through the slush. The excess speed caused the car to fishtail sharply as he turned out onto Highway 50, sending the taillights wagging across the road as the rear wheels struggled to catch on the unplowed asphalt. Billy Ray, despite his buzz, finessed the steering wheel, yanking the wheel in the direction of the skid, and the car straightened out. He drove to the interstate without further incident. He was tired. He didn't know what else to do but drive to the airport. There, after returning the car, he could soak up free drinks in the United Club and sleep until check-in. His flight was at 9 a.m. tomorrow. All he had was time. The snow was unrelenting. In the tunnel of light, his headlights bored in the darkness. The onslaught of swirling flakes was dizzying and hypnotic. Staring into it, his eyes began to play tricks with depth. Anything beyond 50 feet became an educated guess. It was hard to know where he was out here. He settled in the right lane and navigated by the white line that marked the shoulder of the road and listened to two men on the radio talk about aliens. They called them extraterrestrials. "They keep saying I'm crazy, but I know what I saw, Art. Crazy isn't necessarily a bad thing. In a world built on lies, only madmen tell the truth." Occasionally, drivers more brave than Billy Ray cruised past in the left lane before swooping back into the right. When they pulled back in front of him, Billy Ray keyed on their taillights and followed the leader until they got too far away. He wasn't going to race to keep up. In these conditions, even 60 miles per hour was pushing it, and some of these cars must have been going 70. Billy Ray set the cruise to 55, about 5 miles faster than the truckers he passed. They drove with their hazards on, caravaned in long chains like elephants holding each other's tails. In times like this, he envied them their CB radios. With a CB, he could talk to drivers further ahead and ask if it was getting better or worse. "They were no taller than an infant. What color was their skin? Gray like wax." After 15 minutes, he'd had enough of the snow. The constant barrage filed his nerves to a fine edge. He decided to get off at the next gas station he saw to give his eyes a break. Until then, he cracked his window for a cigarette. The wind shrieking through the thin breach drowned out the voices of the radio. He turned them up. He was interested in the things they were saying. Of course the government knows. Then why won't they tell us? They're afraid of what we'll do. You're talking about mass hysteria. I think so. Really? Imagine if the whole world found out there's no God. Ahead of him, a tractor pulling two trailers labored in the deluge. Divided into three sections, it looked like a giant metal centipede. The truck trudged along in low gear, driving slowly to accommodate the weight of its cumbersome payload. When he got within five car lengths, Billy Ray signaled left to pass. So what you're saying is it's too late for us. We cannot be saved. But surely we can hope. Coming around the front of the truck, Billy Ray took his final drag and fed the cigarette into the narrow break in the window. But the wind refused it and threw it back into his lap. Billy Ray flailed, swatting wildly at his thighs, and his knee jerked up into the steering wheel. The car swerved left, and Billy Ray yanked the wheel back to the right, and the tire skidded across the snow, sending the car sliding sideways into the right lane, perpendicular to the oncoming truck. Through the passenger window, the big centipede truck's headlamps filled the car with light, pure white and impossible, all the light in the world. The radiance exploded his vision. He was swallowed by the light and the infinity beyond. He laughed.
This concludes Running the Light by Sam Talent. Narrated by Kyle Kinane, Bert Kreischer, Trey Crowder, Ari Shafir, Mark Maron, Dan Soder, Adam Caden Holland, David Borey, Chris Gethard, Doug Stanhope, Tim Dillon, Jackie Cashian, Tracy Shaley, Greg Shaley, Nathan Lund, John Novosad, Phil Palasol, Nora Lynch, Christine Levine, Rick Kearns, and Emily Talent. Copyright 2018-2019-2020 by Sam Talent. Edited and sound design by Jake Becker and Joe Hatfield. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Too Big to Fail Press, Incorporated, care of Fuse Literary, and was produced in the year 2021 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.